We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Hey, everyone. Welcome into Breaking the Norm with Les Norman, and that means that's me, Les Norman. I'm your host, former Kansas City Royal. Great to have you with us today. And for 15 years now, truckmovers.com has been backing us and partnering with us and just helping us bring all of these great stories to you. For a free quote, you can call Truck Movers at 816-861-5444 or just visit truckmovers.com today. That's their name, truckmovers.com. They're moving thousands or even one vehicle, used equipment, or right off the factory floor. It's that incredible technology, the industry-leading technology in the web services that track your vehicles online. So again, visit truckmovers.com today. Nobody moves more trucks. Nobody moves them better than truckmovers.com. So growing up in a small town, if you've listened to my show at all, you probably at some time have heard that I come from a small town in Illinois. Well, in North Carolina, in the southern part of North Carolina, almost into the, it sits on the border almost to South Carolina, there is this small town called Lawrenburg, North Carolina. And in Lawrenburg, North Carolina, there's about 15,000-ish people, depending on what website you're there. There's a high crime rate there. There is, but it's still kind of a smallish town. And there's some cool people. If you do the research, my guest today is probably not going to know this. Maybe he's heard the name, but this is more of my generation, being in my 50s now. But Ben Vereen, the former actor, is from Lawrenburg, North Carolina. But there's really, if you're an NFL fan and if you're a Las Vegas Raiders fan, Zamir White, the running back, one of the running backs for the Las Vegas Raiders, is from Lawrenburg, North Carolina. And so there's a pretty good list of people out of this small community. But there's also a high school there. It's called Scotland High School. And just a little bit ago, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, there was a graduate from Scotland High School. He was a four-year varsity letterman, played some football, also played some baseball, was a shortstop. He was a top prospect for Perfect Game, won numerous awards. Honor roll stud. He 5'10", 185, went to high school there. And the cool thing is that he got a scholarship. As a freshman, he accepted an offer to go to East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. It had about 22,000 students, part of the American Athletic Conference, a Division I school. And East Carolina is a baseball school. I mean, there's a lot more great things to offer. His parents went there, Dr. Jeff, a pediatrician, and Mitzi Bird, who is a nurse. And so he is the legacy that's coming there. And things were bright, man. Things were good. Things were rolling along for my guest today, Parker Bird. And maybe you caught the news lately, right before we bring him in. But on February 16th of this year, just about three weeks ago, Parker Bird became the first Division I player in history to play a game with a prosthetic leg. It is a fantastic story. It is a sad story. It's a story of faith. It's a story of perseverance, a story of pain. So many things are going on. And so I need to stop talking and let you hear from the man himself. And so without further ado, it is our pleasure here on Breaking the Norm with Les Norman to bring you East Carolina, the East Carolina Pirate, Mr. Parker Bird. What's up, Parker? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. I love the research. You're spot on with everything.
Come on, dude. It's what we do here, man. I got to lift you up. You're the guest. You deserve that kind of accolade. So right now, at the taping of this show, you guys are getting ready to, I think, a three-game at Liberty University in Lynchburg?
Yes, sir. That's right.
Yeah. So you guys are, so far, I think you guys are, is it 7-3 or 7-4 on the season?
Yeah, we're 7-4. Not the best start that we've had here, but we have a great team this year. We have really good chemistry, really good talent in the clubhouse. So really excited to see where the season goes. I mean, I think we're just getting started, looking to get the ball rolling here soon.
My young brother, you know as well as I do that it isn't how you start, it's how you finish, right?
That's correct. Yeah, the rankings in the beginning of the season don't really matter toward the end. So we're looking to get started soon, but we know that it's a long season and a lot of things happen throughout the season. So we're just taking it day by day and game by game and just keep on grinding.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's awesome. I want to wish you well. And so tell me, Tell me about the at-bat. I know you've told it 1,000 times. You're going to tell it 10,000 more. But tell me, a few weeks ago, you got the call. Head coach Cliff Godwin said, hey, Parker, get in there. You're going to pinch hit. You're going to get in the game, man. What was the adrenaline like?
I mean, it was crazy. just a year and a half, two years of rehab just to get to that moment. I mean, it was crazy, the environment there at ECU. I mean, our fan base is, and I mean, biased opinion, but the best in the country. And, I mean, they were electric that night. And then when I went up to the play, the stadium was rocking. So it was cool, man. It was just one of those moments that I'll never forget. And, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people there feel the same way. But, I mean, all glory to God.
Amen to that. And how in the world did you keep it together with your family in the stands? Because we're going to talk more, but again, your parents were a big part of your rehabilitation once you had the boating accident. And so we'll talk about the conversations as we go along, but having your family there along with a great community, a great crowd, I mean, that had to be something really special.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. They've been there, like you said, the whole way. And just the fact, I mean, that video, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but
yes,
there's a video out on them, and, I mean, that got me, and I'm not an emotional guy, and that's just, it explains it all, really, just how much they love me and how much I love them and how happy they were for me because, I mean, they were in the process with me, and, I mean, they were there really since day one, and they always have been, but that just explains them in a video, but I'm just really blessed to call them my family because a lot of people have a lot of rocky homes, but mine's has a great firm foundation with Christ, and I mean, I'm very blessed to call them my family.
Praise God for that, buddy. And you said you're not emotional, but we know, again, I do my research, your dad. There's two things about your dad I learned of the many. One, he's a huge Don Mattingly fan, and two, he's an emotional dude, isn't he?
Yeah, you're spot on with both of those as well. yeah. Don, a quick story about Don Mattingly. So, I got an opportunity to throw out the first pitch at the Houston Astros game last year. And so Don Mattingly was a bench coach last year for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Well, the Blue Jays were in Houston playing, and weird coincidence, but the I guess the Blue Jays assistant coach or one of their, I think the first base coachman, his daughter died in a boating accident on July 3rd, I think. And so the day that I went out for a boat, go tubing, my dad actually called me right before I went out and told me the story about the Toronto Blue Jays head coach or first base coachman's daughter.
Wow.
And it was just a really weird coincidence. So dad had the opportunity to either pick between meeting Don Mattingly, his idol since really, I guess when he was 5 years old or when he was a little kid, or the first base coach, and he picked the first base coach. And I know he was bummed, but he really wanted to meet the first base coach, and he got to do that, so it was
that's
pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's gratitude from your dad, too, really wanting to, you know, just thank him for his strength and for, you know, just being able to relate to you and talk to you guys. That's really cool, man. And it's really been cool to see the journey that you've been on along with your family. And you're right, there's a lot of families out there that are broken and don't have that firm foundation of Christ. And you can just tell with your family, man, they're gentle. You can tell that the Spirit was with you guys. And I'm just so thankful for that, man. I really look up to your family on that. Okay, so moving on, let's talk about that day. So this is before you get to college, right? You're getting ready to head to college. This is the summer, July, right?
Right, yes, sir. So we have to come to summer school for baseball, just get acclimated to just the environment, the new school. And we were here that summer, and everything was going great. And we went out tubing the very last weekend that summer, and things went a little south then. But yeah, so that was before I really even got to college, to be honest.
Yeah, that's crazy. So go to the day. Tell me the day. You're with some friends. You're You're heading out. You guys are going to get on the boat. You're going to do some tubing like every kid your age and even people my age in my 50s are going to do when it's flipping hot out and you're going to go, you know, when you've got that opportunity. So just tell me about that day. You went out with some friends, met them out, and you're tubing, and things went normal. Like, you know, you get flipped just like every, you know, you're teenagers and someone's pulling you on the boat and you get flipped and you get shaken off. And so you're in the water. Tell me what happened from there.
Yeah, so, I mean, like you said, we were here for the summer, and then we actually went out that Friday, and everything was going good, and everything went great. Well, that Saturday morning, I was supposed to come back to Greenville, too, because we went to a little place called Bath, North Carolina, because one of our teammates at the time had a river house there, so we went down that Friday, had a great time, and that Saturday, I was supposed to take one of my teammates back here to Greenville, because he was supposed to help an elderly couple move some furniture.
Yeah.
Well, he got a text that morning saying, "Hey, Miles, thanks for volunteering, but we don't really need your help." So, hey, let's just go back out and go tubing. My first ride went great. Me and one of my teammates were on the tube first. First ride went great. And like you said, we got thrown off. And, but, hey, since that was so fun, let's do it again. So,
of course.
we got back on, and the driver was a little bit more determined to throw us off. So, we both hit the water pretty hard when we fell, and we were shaken up, and so we both decided just to go back to the boat. Well, I was swimming a little bit ahead of the guy that fell in the water, and I was kind of using the rope from the tube to help pull myself back in. And as we got within 10 yards or so, the driver of the boat put the boat in reverse, or it got put in reverse somehow, and basically ended up pulling me under the boat, and the propellers hit both of my legs and my left hand as well. So, but luckily, the teammate that was supposed to go back to Greenville that day had but he's from Florida, and he had a friend die in a boating accident. So thankfully he knew all the boating 101 and everything to do. So he knew that getting help was very urgent. And so he jumped in immediately. I was telling the guys caught out of the boats because our boat wasn't able to move. Mm-hmm. I was telling them to tie tourniquets on my legs with their shirts. So they were ripping off their shirts and tying tourniquets. And,
wow.
I mean, it was a wild scene. And then so they finally got one boat to stop. And that boat, they told them the situation. And the boat was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, we can't really help. We have kids on the boat. We don't really want to, like, expose them to this bloody scene." They're like, "What?" And they're like, "But here's a first aid kit." And "We can't really do anything with this." So they continued to wave down other boats, and the second boat stopped. And the only reason that boat was there in the position that day is because there was two couples on the boat, and one of the couples had gotten into an argument, and they were just heading back in. They were just like, "Hey, can you take us back in to the marina, and I was called quit for a day." Well, on the way back, they saw us, and they stopped. And they told them the situation. They agreed to help, and they were getting me transported over to that boat. And one of the ladies was talking to me, and she's like, "Hey, I'm a nurse, and I know everything to do." So she started tying more tourniquets around my legs, and then they transported me to the marina there where there's an ambulance waiting on me to transport me to the local hospital. And at the local hospital, there's a helicopter waiting on me to airlift me to ECU Health in Greenville.
I mean, the boat that stops you has a nurse on it, and then the ambulance is waiting, and then the helicopter's waiting. I mean, do you see God's hand in all of that?
Oh, 100%.
Man, my goodness.
I wasn't supposed to be awake at that time at all. I mean, my blood pressure after they gave me every single blood product they had on the helicopter was 60 over 30.
Wow.
And you're not supposed to be awake at all, but I was super aware of everything. I had this weird experience where I knew that I was dying because I was just laying there in the helicopter, and they were operating on me and doing what they could do. And I kind of had this alibi experience where I saw myself laying there, and I felt like I was as if out of my body.
Wow.
And I was rising, and I was going to heaven, but yeah, I mean, he was there the whole time. He was there, stopping the propeller 1 millimeter from my sciatic nerve, which is the main nerve, down my leg. And I would have lost my entire leg if that would have hit that. He was there, the whole time I was working out in high school just to have pretty muscular legs to be able to have that 1 millimeter left to save my sag nerve. So it was there forever.
Yeah, I saw some pictures, dude. You were pretty yoked coming into college, man. So, yeah, that weight room paid off for more than your batting average.
Yeah, that's for sure. I had a pretty intense workout schedule, but, man, it paid off.
So, do you remember, I mean, I also watched the video of you and your friends called 1%. And, you know, as I'm hearing them describe it and you're in the video, it was the real tall friend of yours sitting on your left on the end, and it was he was talking about the scene as they got you in the boat and there's just blood everywhere and all that. I mean, can you remember? I mean, I know shock comes into play, but I mean, you had to have been so scared. And I mean, how do you feel like you were able to get through that? Because I mean, that's just I was trying to imagine as best I could. I mean, there's no way I could really, but just trying to imagine the fear in that moment. And obviously, you know, you said you're in the helicopter and you're BP 60 over 30 and people are scrambling and they're trying to save you and it's just chaos. I mean, can you even remember your mindset during that time?
Yeah. I mean, I knew that guy had a plan and that, I mean, if that was my time, that was my time. I was very content with whatever that happened. But, I mean, as every human being alive wants to do is they want to keep living. So, I just try to stay calm and just trust the people that were there in that situation. And honestly, to help myself do that, I just told myself, like, stay awake, stay awake. And I never really looked at my legs just because I didn't want to start hit that panic button and start freaking out. So instead, I was playing with the meat that was hanging out from my hand and thinking that was bad. But, just trusting that the people were there for a reason, and obviously they were. So, I mean, it was very, very good timing for everybody to be there.
Yeah. So, fast forward a little bit. Now you're in the hospital. You know, the doctors have seen you, and they're getting you stable, and they're getting you back to where, you know, you're going to live, but obviously things are going to be different. Your parents are there. I'd heard that because everybody called ahead that your parents got to the hospital like 2 minutes after you got to the hospital. I mean, more incredible timing right there. Wow. But, I mean, you know, you're in the hospital, and so, you know, what was it like when they tell you, hey, we're going to have to amputate part of your leg? I mean, this is the first part, because you were told that you were going to have your knee amputated, which would have ended any chance at baseball. That didn't end up happening. But, I mean, that's got to be pretty traumatic to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. So, yeah, my accident happened on July 23rd, and my amputation was August 4th. So I had about 10 days or so to just rationalize what happened. And then, I mean, just during those 10 days, it was up and down, up and down. I mean, at first, they didn't know where the sciatic nerve was. They thought it had been cut. They just had no idea. And they were just trying to get the bleeding to stop. And then after everything was kind of stabilized, they were telling my parents, like, hey, I think he's going to be okay. He's going to have both of his legs. And he's going to need some more extensive rehab. And he'll be back to where he was. And I think on August 2nd or so, the blood went down to my foot, but it wasn't coming back up, and my foot became really pale and cold. And so both of my parents, being in the medical background, they kind of knew what was going to happen and what was happening. So on August 4th that morning, they came into my morning at like 5:30 a.m., 6 a.m., and Dr. Yamaguchi, who was my vascular surgeon at the time, came in, and he's a very blunt guy, a great guy, but he's a surgeon. He has to do what he has to do. And he came in there and was like, hey, Parker, good morning. I was like, good morning. And he's like, well, you have two options. And I was like, what's that? And he's like, well, we can continue with this drip we have you on now, which isn't really working, and the infection can spread to your kidneys, your lungs. And
yeah, could kill you.
You're going to end up dying.
Yeah.
Or option B, as he said in his words, we can amputate your right lower extremity. And so I was kind of like, well, that's not really two options. I want to keep living. So I said, hey, let's cut off the dead parts and let's keep rolling with life. And kind of did that ever since that moment. And, I mean, obviously it was very emotional at first, but like I said, I'm not really an emotional guy, and just I had the mindset of what's next and however I could do to get out of the hospital, whatever I could do to get back onto the diamond, that's what I was willing to do. So just kept moving. And, I mean, there were hard words. And then, like you said, my knee was completely dead at one point. So after the amputation, my knee was black. And my surgeon at that time told me, or told me and my parents, like, hey, his knee's dead. Like, we're going to have to amputate above his knee. And with people that don't really know much about the prosthetic world, the knee is a very key joint to a prosthetic because yeah. it just is involved with a lot of movement. And if it wasn't for my knee, I'd have to move a lot from my hip and my butt and all that. But so I think three surgeons told me and my family that my knee was dead, that they were going to have to cut it off basically, and I was going to go to inpatient rehab in the hospital. And, well, during the time, my mom was posting on Facebook just updating people and just asking for prayers. And I was going to the hyperbaric oxygen chamber.
Yep.
It was actually off-site from ECU Health, but I was the first patient that was able to do that because it was an outpatient thing. And so they were able to get me into that, and I was doing that, and with prayers, I mean, it came back completely. Blood flow was 100%, and I think the surgery before I was supposed to have my amputation above the knee, the surgeon came out after the surgery and was like, hey, there's a little trickle of blood. I don't want you guys to get your hopes up, but we're going to just not cut anything off for right now. And my parents obviously took that as a big win. And then
yeah.
the next surgery just went out for a washout and to see how everything was doing. And he came back and he was like, he has complete blood flow. And ever since then, he didn't really talk another word about amputating above the knee. So, I mean, God bless me to have a knee and be in the position I am today, because without that, I don't think I would be able to play baseball, to be honest.
Yeah, no doubt. So we're going to go ahead and take a break, and in our next segment, I'm just going to give you ahead of time, I want to talk about this road back, the rehab, the hitting with one arm, one hand, just everything that you had to go through that all led up to just a few weeks ago on February 16th of 2024, Parker Byrd, the sophomore student, freshman on the field, infielder slash right-handed pitcher at East Carolina University, number 16, the 5'10", 185-pounder out of Laurinburg, North Carolina, becomes the first Division I player in history to play with a prosthetic leg. I got to tell you, Parker, when I saw that on TV, I grabbed my sons, who are 19 and 22, pulled them in, said, "Don't you ever tell me that there's something that you can't do." And because of your courage, because of your faith, because of your family, and because of what you've done with the help of the Lord and so many, but your hard work, your determination, all of it, man, you gave me that moment with my sons. You're going to give, and already have, and for years and years, you're going to give families, kids, amputees, so many different people hope. And through all of this, the way you and your family have shared your faith and have given God glory through this, there's going to be a lot of people, too, that are going to come to the Lord because of your active, alive testimony, my man. So I just want to say, on behalf of all those people, thank you.
Yeah, man, that's what it's about. That's my plan in life. That's my goal now. I know that my life has a bigger purpose than just baseball, and I'm here to live out a walking testimony that only he could provide. So I was actually reading in Romans chapter 8 today, and verse 18 is basically saying that the sufferings of this present time are not worth the reward we're going to have in the very end. So, right. I mean, just reminders like that each and every day is awesome.
That's amazing. All right, well, we're going to take a break. It is such an honor to have him here. Parker Byrd is joining us. He's an infielder, right-handed pitcher from East Carolina University. The Pirates out in Greenville, North Carolina, approximately 22,000 students. They are members of the AAC, the American Athletic Conference, a D1 school known for its baseball, getting ready to have a three-game set out in Lynchburg, Virginia, against Liberty University. So he's going to stay right there. We're going to talk about maybe the rehab and the road back here when we come back. And then I want to dive into a little bit about what's it like growing up a bird. What's it like being in the Byrd family when he was younger, coming up and just to be such a strong man of a young man and yet so advanced in years as far as his faith goes. I can't wait for this next segment, so make sure you stay right there. I want to thank First Federal Bank of Kansas City. Knowing we will all work hard for our money, they just want to know, is your money working hard for you? Let First Federal Bank of Kansas City get you started with the confidence and clarity you need to master your money. Helping you know, showing you how to succeed through the whole mortgage process. Well, that's what they do best. So visit them at ffbkc.com or call 816-241-7800. You can also check them out on Facebook. First Federal Bank of Kansas City, you are better together. Remember, FDIC, equal housing lender. We'll be right back. Welcome back into Breaking the Norm. Glad you're with us today. Breaking the Norm with Les Norman is brought to you by Community Financial Services Group. Knowing that market volatility, political landscape, the madness that goes on every day. You're talking about investments, insurance, estate planning. There's so much to know. I don't know, but my friends at Community Financial Services Group can help. So schedule a comprehensive review at 816-322-2760. Community Financial Services Group is teamwork that you can bank on. Well, my guest, by popular demand, and by popular demand, I mean that I was hoping that I was going to get him on the show because he's a busy guy, and he's busy for a reason. His name is Parker Byrd. He is a sophomore student, but a freshman on the fielder at East Carolina University, the Pirates, out in Greenville, North Carolina. He, on February 16th, became the first Division I player in history to play in a game with a prosthetic leg. It was an incredible moment. His incredible family was there watching. The community there was watching. It was all over the country, probably by now all over the world. It is an amazing story. This man and his family are people of faith. They're people of courage. They're people of perseverance. And they already, Parker has taught me a thing or two by researching and just by hearing him in the last segment. So he had a boating accident on July 23rd. And I'm going to let you go back to the first segment because there's a lot that went on there. So make sure you go back if you're just joining us and listen to that. It is pretty unbelievably incredible that he's even here. But to see how God orchestrated the events that got him from the water to the boat to another boat that had a nurse on it, to the marina where the ambulance was waiting, to the hospital where the helicopter was waiting, and from the helicopter to the trauma center hospital where they brought him back and got him stable, and then that's where it all started. So, Parker, what we said in the last segment, we were going to talk about, okay, you were almost going to have it amputated, and I remember listening, and again, you're going to know I did my research because I was watching and listening to the Good Amen podcast. You and your dad were on there, and your pastors mm-hmm. were on there, and it was great, and your dad talked about looking at the knee where the bone and the muscle were black, and then all of a sudden some blood came in, and he said the dry bones came to life again, and man, that got me chills because that's so biblical right there. I love to hear that. So, all right, man, it's not like you just strap on a prosthetic, they fit you for it, and you just start running. That's not how it works, of course. Right. So let's talk a little bit about the road back, man. What were your thoughts going into, okay, I get this prosthetic sometime, I want to come back and I want to play. Just kind of talk us through this road of rehabilitation to get to where you were back on the field.
Yeah, so I got out of the hospital late August. I was in the hospital for 4 weeks. I had a total of 22 surgeries in 45 days.
Jeez.
So, I mean, I was in and out of the hospital for surgeries. And so for that little bit, I was really just trying to get everything with that aspect of the rehab just over with. And then once I was able to get that done, your leg still has to heal for a little bit. And so I wasn't able to get my leg where my prosthetic fit until December of 2022. And so there's about 4 months span there where, I mean, I was doing a bunch of one-legged workouts and just doing everything I could, really. Yeah. And, so then I got fitted in December. And, I mean, the fitting process at first was very tedious, and your leg's not used to the prosthetic, and the fit wasn't very well at first. And then of March in 2023, the Challenge Athletes Foundation came into my life, and they gave me a grant to get a prosthetic with one of the best prosthetists in the world, named David Rotter out of Chicago. And with that, it was a more dynamic leg, and it was more suited to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So after I got that, I mean, everything started fitting better, and then I started walking without any assistance, and then Started running very slowly.
Yeah.
And then I started running more and more and then just getting movement back. Just the lateral movement was very tough.
Yeah, I bet.
And then just the baseball aspect of it. I mean, you have a lot of questions, how am I going to get back into the field? So really just a lot of PT just to get back. And I mean, I'm luckily to be back, but I mean, not content where I'm at all. And I do want to get better, but I'm good enough right now to be back on the field.
So how does it feel when you're in the batter's box, you know, if you're taking BP or all that? I know you walked in your first at bat. And, dude, look, I'm a hitter by nature, and, you know, you're a hitter too. So I know you pitch a little bit, but you're a hitter by nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, right, yeah, you know, so right. That means there's always that – there's going to be always that thing between you and I versus those pitchers, right? I mean, it is what it is. What's that
guy?
Yeah, what's that guy thinking throwing you a spinner on the first pitch? Come on,
yeah,
man.
I mean,
Giants the dude.
I guess it's the fear aspect, right? yeah, I mean.
That a boy.
It was wild. I was definitely going out there, dead red heater. I mean, at least a charity fastball there, right? And then,
no charity. No, you're just going to smoke it if he throws it.
I was ready for it. I've been waiting 2 years for it. But
yeah.
Saw spin out ahead. I knew that was my approach. And I was looking for a fastball up and never really got it. And then he threw four straight after spinning me a strike. So, but yeah, it definitely caught me off guard.
Wow. So how does it feel when you hit? I mean, I'm the big hitting nerd, mechanic nerd. I taught it a lot and coached my boys after I'd retired from playing. So, I mean, how does it feel in the batter's box? You got a good base on that side on your right leg?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of adjustment, but now that I don't have a back ankle, what we've taught all of our lives is squishing the bug.
Yeah.
And I can't really do that anymore. So we definitely had to make some adjustments. So now in my swing, I do the scissor motion that, I mean, is natural to everybody, but
sure,
we just kind of get taught out of it just because it looks unnatural. But so I do the kind of the Jose Altuve swing. I mean, he's kind of a lot more dramatic with it, but just a natural movement, just that kickback motion. And I mean, recently, actually, it's pretty recent, but I had been hitting the no stride, which, so just the balance part of it just was a lot easier from no stride. But
yeah. Just
in the cages, been working recently, just getting that stride again. I mean, it feels great, and I feel like I have a lot more power, and I mean, putting it out the ballpark again. So
nice. So did you have to, because of the difference in what you're using, you know, what you can't use in the lower half, did you have to really get in the gym and build up some serious upper body strength to compensate?
Oh, I mean, definitely. I mean, I was with rehab at first before I even had my prosthetic. That's kind of what I was hammering home, was upper body, and then I guess that left leg that I still had. I was hammering those, but I knew that my upper body was going to have to be used a lot more than it was before. And so, I mean, I was benching all the time and so a bunch of upper body workouts, kind of basically 315.
Come on. Now, why do you got to make me look bad, dude? Come on. Dang.
So, yeah, man, I was working the upper body everywhere I moved with crutches and stuff. So.
Wow, that's impressive, man. My hat's off to you, man. You are one determined individual, and well, there ain't nothing like baseball, is there?
Nah, I mean, it's the best sport in the world.
Believe it. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. Tell me what it was like growing up being a little bird, the being a member of the bird family. What was there competition, brothers and sisters? You know, tell me what it was like.
Yeah, competition for sure. I have two little sisters. I have an 18-year-old sister who, I mean, was my best friend growing up every step of the way. And then I have an 11-year-old, about turned 12-year-old sister. And, I mean, she's my best friend, too, but she's more, I look at her as more of a kid aspect. And, I mean, Brindley, the little one, she's a lot more competitive in nature than Grayson is, who's the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we're all competitive, but Grayson guy has more of the carefree spirit. But, I mean, she's by far the best athlete in the family.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, my dad is a huge competitor, and so is my mom, so I mean, that competitive nature is just kind of installed in really all of us, but Grayson's is more that carefree spirit. But, yeah, I mean, it was awesome, though. I mean, my sisters are outstanding. They've been basically all my travel ball tournaments, which is a lot to ask for yeah. teenage girls yeah. and a little kid. And I mean, they've been all over the world just watching me play baseball. So I mean, they're always in good spirits about it. But I mean, they're the best there is.
How has faith played a part in your family growing up?
I mean, that's what we're rooted in. We're a family of Christ, and we have been forever. But I mean, I think my accident has led us even closer. I think our faith has definitely grown stronger in him after the accident, just because I mean, you can believe in him, you can know that he's real, but whenever an accident like myself has happened and firsthand experienced that, I mean, you know that there's no other God and no other religion that you should believe in my opinion. But yeah, so I mean, we're huge Christians, and love him with all our heart.
Yeah, man, that's amazing. And that'll preach too, by the way, Parker.
Definitely.
What have you learned from mom and dad?
I mean, I learned everything. They're great humans. I would say that the number one thing I've learned is my work ethic, just because I've seen both of them just work extremely hard in their professions and life, really. My dad's a pediatrician, and he's working all the time just to provide for the family, and he'll take jobs in a different city on the weekends, and wow. My family would go up there with him, and they'll give us a house and stuff like that. And then my mom, she was a nurse growing up, but she's a stay-at-home mom now ever since Brenda was born. But mm-hmm. I mean, she's just providing for her family with the house aspect, and make sure everything's clean, and I mean, she just works her butt off just to make sure that we have the best home possible. Mm-hmm. So definitely my work ethic, but just my positive attitude. I think that everything starts with your family, and just having a firm foundation like that is really key to really everything in my life.
And watching an interview with your mom, she said that she was the one that was tasked to tell you that your knee was going to be amputated, and then after a few moments, she made you look at her, and she said, "Hey, don't let anybody tell you what you can or can't do." And I saw that, and I was just like, am I gonna be able to stop crying during this interview? I mean, holy cow. But I mean, what incredible encouragement and love from a mother to a son, right?
Yeah, I mean, that moment's really funny looking back, because I wouldn't say that my dad has ever doubted me except that one moment.
I remember.
I mean, he was just broken, and I mean, he said something that, I mean, I know he regrets, but this was after they told me that they were going to amputate above my knee, and I guess typically I wake up in the post-op, and that specific time I woke up in my bedroom, and I always ask, like, how did it go as soon as I guess I woke up, and I asked her, and she said, they're going to have to amputate above your knee. And I was like, okay. Because in my mind, they've already amputated my leg. I mean,
right.
A knee's not too big of a deal. So I was like, okay, that's cool. And my dad's like, Parker, do you know what this means? And I was like, that I won't have a knee. And he's like, no, it means that you'll never be able to play baseball again. And I just lost it. Mm. And I mean, I probably cried harder than before when they told me that I had to amputate my leg. And my mom looked at me and was like, Parker, I mean, I think she looked at my dad first and gave a really stern look that he knew exactly what it meant.
Yep.
And I'm sure you've been there before.
Yeah.
Then she looked at me and was just like, Parker, don't ever let anybody tell you what you can and cannot do. And only you can stop yourself from doing whatever you want in life. And I mean, she's had several moments like that in the hospital. And another story is one night that I was in the hospital, I was having doubts, and the devil was getting to my thoughts. And I told her, I was like, Mom, I don't think I'll ever be able to play baseball again. And she's like, well, why do you say that? And I was like, well, Mom, I don't have a leg. And there's never been a Division I player to ever play with a prosthetic leg. And she's like, well, it always has to be a first. Why can't it be you?
Amen to that, brother. Yes.
Ever since that moment, that's kind of when my mindset did switch, and that I realized that there has to be a first for everything. And why couldn't it be me? There's really no excuses. I was still at a heartbeat, that I was still living, and I mean, I was never out of it after that.
That's awesome. I love it. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, I'm going to hit Parker with some fun questions. He doesn't know they're coming. Some really, really cool questions that, we're going to have a little short time, just a real quick one. So when we come back, you listeners, you better be ready because I'm going to come on the air and we are going to fire these things right out. So Parker Bird is our guest. Make sure you stay there for our final segment. We'll be right back. Welcome back into Breaking the Norm with Les Norman. My guest is Parker Bird, East Carolina University Pirate. He is a sophomore student, but a freshman on the field. And he became, on February 16th of this year, the first Division I player in history to play with a prosthetic leg. He had a horrifying boat accident, but he survived it and had his leg amputated, but was going to have the knee amputated or above the knee, and it didn't end up happening. And a lot of miracles worked in there. Strong man, strong family of faith. Go back and check out the first two segments, man. Just an incredible story, incredible young man, godly family. All right, Parker, let's have some fun. You ready?
Let's do it.
You ready for this? Okay, let's do it. All right, let's start with this. What is your or your favorite walk-up song?
Walk-up song. That's a good one. I would say probably How I Live. That's a good one, but right now mine's still Dre, and it's the part where it's like Guess Who's Back, just because and all that. So I mean, that's a cool one, very fitting for the moment. But
nice.
That's a good question. I think one of the coolest walk-up songs ever is Bryce Harper whenever he went to Philadelphia and he did Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And knowing Bryce Harper and the fans and agents, he probably didn't think of it, but I guarantee he took credit for it. So there you go. All right. all right. Tell me what your teammates mean to you.
I mean, they're really just my brothers. They were there since the boating accident, and the other ones that weren't there on the boat, I mean, they have fully supported me, and those are the guys that are the reason why I have such positive spirits, because they show up for me every day, and they don't treat me just as if I'm a guy without a leg. They just treat me as another guy that's just playing baseball, and they know how hard I work, and how hard they work, and just have a lot of respect for them, and everything I've done, everybody that's really ever played with me, but especially those guys that, after the accident, that stuck with me and still believed in me.
Awesome answer. Okay. I'm obviously old. I'm an old man now, and my generation of playing is gone. You're this new generation coming in. So tell me, do you like these new rules of a pitch clock and a bigger base and, you know, all these different things? You like the old school way or you like the new school rules?
Oh, I'm an old school guy, man.
That's another reason to like you.
I'm not a big fan of the pitch clock. I feel like baseball is a game that people go to the ballpark to enjoy, because they know that there's no clock to baseball. But now that there is, it's just different, man. It's just rushing people into the batter's box and umpires really not having feel because that's their job. They really can't. And I mean, luckily, whenever I got my at-bat, the umpire I have kind of more of a personal relationship with, and he knew that it was a special moment, and he called time because I think he was crying as well.
Yeah, that's good. That's awesome, man.
But I mean, as long as they have feel with it, but I'm not opposed to the bigger bags. I mean, that really doesn't make too much. I guess it doesn't really matter that much, but
yeah.
I think it's kind of crazy and silly, the pickoffs and all those rules too.
Yeah, good answer. Old school. Love it. Okay, final question, and this is going to have to be quick. We're just a little over a minute left, but you're still a young man, but you've been through more in a life than most people will ever have to endure. So not the physical part, because we know you're a handsome stud. We get all that. But when you look in the mirror, tell me what you see.
I mean, I see just me. I mean, I see myself, the same guy that works hard every day, that shows up and gives everything he's got, and a guy that loves Christ and knows that he's the only reason I'm here today. So just a guy that is a believer, a guy that never will give up, and just loves who I am.
Parker, I've been doing this 15 years, and this is by far my favorite show. And I've interviewed some of the most amazing people from around the world and some of the most amazing athletes and actors and writers and all that stuff. And this has been by far my favorite episode. You are a stud. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your story, not just with me, but with everybody around the world. You are so gracious, and it's just interview after interview after interview, man. I can't thank you enough, and I hope that down the line you and I will be able to stay in touch, my friend.
It's an honor. Well, I appreciate you for having me on here, man.
Absolutely. Well, you stay right there. I'm going to give you the proper goodbye. To the rest of you, thanks for joining us today. We got to shut this thing down. You can follow me on Twitter, @LNorman22. Until next time, I'm Les Norman. Thanks for joining us.